Jack Mercer from Jack Mercer and the Whiskey Bandits. You're listening to CITR 101.9. Jack Mercer from Jack Mercer and the Whiskey Bandits. You're listening to CITR 101.9. Thank you.
Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I am your host, Marie Bernard, and this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver on unceded Musqueam territory at the University of British Columbia campus. And today we are going to be speaking all about the evolution of our planet, the evolution of the human race. We have Barbara Marks Hubbard on. And she is the author, Barbara, we can hear you laughing at me right now. she's the author of Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential. And Barbara Marks Hubbard is a noted futurist, evolutionary thought leader, social innovator, and public speaker. Her other books include Emergence and Birth 2012 and Beyond. And welcome to the show, Barbara.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for being with us. So, I was saying that we're talking about the evolution of the human race, and you were laughing. So what was funny about that?
Well, I know. I mean, it's such a big subject. No, I mean, I'm sometimes I laugh at myself that the undertaking of, you know, being here to serve the evolution of the human race, you know, you could laugh. Mm-hmm. But it's actually serious. But it's true.
Well, your book, Conscious Evolution, actually, I mean, it sounds like you have, you're a lot more optimistic about our options than I am. I think that humanity essentially, I mean, I love people, individual people, but to me, humanity, it has become a cancer on this planet. And your book talks about the crises that we're going through is actually what we need in order to evolve.
Well, you know, I'm calling it, my metaphor is it's a crisis of birth of an emerging human and an emerging culture. Mm-hmm. And here's, if you take an evolutionary perspective on this, and you realize for billions of years, nature has been creating new whole systems from single cells to multi-cells to animals to humans to planet Earth, you recognize nature is always evolving life. We are being evolved, not just that we are evolving, but the natural tendency, if you want to call it the divine impulse or the implicate order or spirit in action, we don't have a good word for this. That tendency that has been going on for billions of years uses crises, uses entropy, uses disorder to create higher order. Mm-hmm. That's what it does. So what I noticed by having evolutionary consciousness, I noticed that our crisis is producing a lot of innovation, a lot of creativity, a lot of more caring. And the news doesn't understand that. The political system doesn't get it. The universities don't teach it. But we're here, millions of us. And so all I'm saying is if we connect that which is already created, we will see an emerging world in our midst. That's not idealistic. That's realistic. It's unrealistic not to notice what's working. Mm-hmm. The news is unrealistic because it's not balanced.
Absolutely. Well, I don't watch the news anymore. It just upsets me.
Well, you see, that's not so smart either, because what we need is new news. Mm-hmm. What we need is pro-action. What we need is emergence. What we need is like this radio show. You know, you're doing a great thing because you're helping to communicate ideas that may well be helpful. That's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's a lot.
Thank you, Barbara. Well, and I'm curious how much work, how much study has gone into this book? Because you tell a story about when you were in Paris as a teenager, you met your husband there. So, I mean, it sounds like this work has been a lifelong project for you.
You know, it's what they call a vocation of destiny. Some people are born with something like, I hear that one of the great bullfighters was always having a red flag when he was four. Or somebody wanted a violin when he was five. who became a great violinist. But what happened to me was when the United States dropped the bombs on Japan, I was 15 years old, and I had a sudden, horrified awakening. But if we use this power with self-centered consciousness, we destroy the world. But if the power had positive use, we could evolve the world. So I asked, what is the meaning of all this new power, mainly science, technology, and industry, that's good? And I found nobody knew. Nobody knew the direction of civilization. Nobody knew a positive vision of a future. Really, nobody. So I then became a seeker, and I began to find what the answer is. And so that's what happened to me. It's a life purpose. It's deep, deep down in.
Well, we're
you know, it's a vocation that you're born with almost.
Awesome. Well, I love that. And we're talking right now with Barbara Marks Hubbard. She is the author of Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential. And you talk about you have an evolutionary agenda, and this is your agenda it seems like you feel is the most important things that we need to focus on. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's a very obvious thing. It's like, we have to restore the environment. We have to find a way to overcome poverty and disease where we already know how to do it. We need to find a way to go into clean energy. We need to find a way to develop more cooperative social systems. And when you say that we need to do this, we are doing it in small ways everywhere. So the most important thing we need to do is to identify what's already working, map, track, connect, and communicate it. Mm-hmm. And I ran for vice president in 1984 to create in the office of the vice presidency a process. I called it a peace room as sophisticated as a war room. War rooms track enemies and how to defeat them. Peace rooms would track innovation, creativity, and connect them to communicate to America and the world what's working. And I actually got my name placed in nomination. I got over 200 delegates, and I was the other woman nominated in 1984, along with Geraldine Ferraro, for this idea. Not because the Democrats are all passionate metaphysical geniuses. They were pragmatic. This is a very pragmatic idea.
And so, Barbara, I mean, you mentioned that you came up with this idea in the 80s. People were on board. It's a great idea. So why do we not have peace rooms?
You know, it's a darn good question. I'll tell you, one of the reasons is that I'm a great communicator and not a great organizer. If I had had a political organizer with me, I think we could have had a political movement now. But you see, I'm a storyteller and communicator and a co-creator, but not an organizer that would be needed to have this to happen. And I think it was very disappointing to me because I had 90 positive future centers all over the country. It was a phenomenon that I was able to do this. And I did it just because I knew it was right. And I wanted to tell the new story of our potential. And I did. But, you know, you don't understand timing sometimes. Maybe what I was an early pioneer. You can still see my speech on YouTube if you're interested. Barbara Marks Hubbard, Democratic National Convention, 1984. And I'm hoping that somebody will do it. But even that, I don't think it's going to be in government. I think it's going to be done by the people. So my current plan is that by 2020, this would be 2020, by September 21st, 2020, International Peace Day, that we will have a peace room as sophisticated as a war room, and we'll have a planetary event to connect what's working. And I'd like you to help me achieve that.
Awesome. Well, the first thing people can do, I guess, is check out your book, Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential. We're speaking right now with the author, Barbara Marks Hubbard. And yeah, I'm going to check out your YouTube video. So that was Barbara Marks Hubbard, Democratic National Convention, 1984, if you want to look it up on YouTube.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
And so let's talk about what is working with humanity and our planet right now.
Well, I think the first thing that's working are the numbers of people who are shifting in their consciousness toward a more empathetic, caring, loving, inspired way of being. When I got married in 1951, I met a lot of nice people, but I didn't meet anybody who is what I would call an evolutionary, who has a sense of what's emerging, what's creative, what's new. And what's happening, I think, is the evolutionary perspective of the emerging possibilities out of the dying of the old culture, that something new is being born. There are, in my experience, everywhere I go now, people say something new is happening. You may not know what it is, but they think it's something new. The second part of it is something new is happening within people to want to find life purpose. To, as you get older, like I'm 85. Now, 85 years old is old. But actually, I'm telling people I'm feeling newer every day. Now, why am I feeling newer? Because the world is new and I have a role to play in it. So the next thing that's happening is desire for life purpose. There are tons of courses now that are being offered throughout the internet on how to find your life purpose. And that's more than getting a job. It's more than having a nice house. Life purpose is you feel this is what you're born to do. And when you're born to do something, like in my case, it was discover the meaning of our new power, it's be a communicator, you are then self-rewarded by the work. It's an amazing gift that people, Abraham Maslow discovered this, the great psychologist who founded the Human Potential Movement. He decided to study wellness rather than sickness. And what he discovered is that well and self-actualizing people were all had one thing in common, chosen work. They found intrinsically self-rewarding and of service. There it is. Chosen work, that is to say vocation, that you find self-rewarding when you do it. You're like, I feel self-rewarded right now. Why? You probably feel self-rewarded because I doubt that you're being paid thousands of dollars to do what you do.
No, I'm not.
So why are you doing it? What got into you?
Is that a rhetorical question, or do you want to talk about it?
No, it's real. I want you to tell me.
Well, I love radio. I went to broadcasting school. I wanted a show, and I wanted a show either about spirituality or sexuality, and they already had a show about sex and relationships. So, I mean, I feel like this topic, as well as the one of relationships, is really important to discuss, and I get to speak with people like you, amazing people with all this life experience and wisdom, and that can share it with me and with the audience. So, yeah, I've been doing the show for something like 7 years, so I guess it's self-rewarding or I wouldn't still be doing it.
There you are. So you have a vocation, a calling to communicate. You love to do it. You're doing it. And there's a certain self-rewarding quality because you're paid up by the doing of it, and you need, of course, resources and all of that. But you're not doing it just for the pay. Mm-hmm. You're not doing it just for the resources you might generate. So the world is moving, I would say, since I grew up, to a much larger number of people wanting to act out of their own deeper life purpose. Wanting to find what they intrinsically love to do and to try to do it. So you're seeing a rise of entrepreneurship in the millennials. Instead of thinking you're going to go to college, get into debt, graduate, and try to be hired by someone else who doesn't exactly have your life purpose in mind, more of the millennials, as well as the older women like myself, are becoming entrepreneurial, mm-hmm. which is to say joining together to create. And I think the freeing enterprise system, starting with conscious capitalism and some of the big entrepreneurs wanting to be conscious capitalists, but way down from there in the smaller enterprise mode, lots of people are attempting to find their life purpose and find, you know, others who can do it, like the great founders of Silicon Valley. That's why we love Steve Jobs so much, you know, the people who did this in their garages to get started. Well, I mean, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm teaching on the Shift Network. I have thousands of students. And the reason I can survive is that I'm serving somebody. And it's self-rewarding. So I would say freeing enterprise. Then if you look at the high-tech end of things, you find enormous new capacities in energy, in ways of cleaning up the environment. We have and we know how to do it all. So what's really missing here? What's missing is the awareness that we're already potentially able to do this. What's missing is a certain attunement to higher frequencies of life, of love. See, I've just been working with a healer for myself, a condition that I have, and she was telling me, just channel divine love. Because the moment you're in divine love, your nervous system is signaled, and you start healing. Hmm. And it was very interesting because I have a condition. It's called chronic lymphocytic leukemia. It's a non-lethal form of leukemia, but too many white blood cells. So, you know, even when I said this to her, I would feel this stress, and she could pick it up. She said, now your divine love is healing. Divine love is coming right through me. Don't even say healing. Divine love is coming right through me. My bone marrow is doing this. And what happens is you change your feeling tone. You change your nervous system. And she's curing cancer. She's doing huge things because disease is caused by fear and disease of thought. Mm-hmm. And so when you go right to the source of the problem is that. And that is in everybody's power to shift. So not only do we have solutions of most of our problems, but they're not fully used or known, and we have the power to shift ourselves and our health simply by awareness that we are part of a divine process of creation and releasing the stress of separation and fear within ourselves. This is possible for every human being, everyone. And so, you know, if you start looking at it like this, oh, my God, we're closer than we think. And I want to say something to you about sexuality. I have a really interesting theory on the evolution of sex.
Ooh. And, I can't wait to hear it.
Here it is. We know that nature invented sexuality to reproduce species. And certainly in the human level, it's an amazing gift to join your genes to have a baby. And so that little sperm comes in and hits the egg, and there's a whole new being. And nature makes sex very pleasurable so that we have reproduced really up to maximum. And we have a lot of sexuality now, like we have pornography and we have hooking up and we have various types of sex. But I would say it isn't completely satisfying. And what I've discovered is what I'm calling suprasexuality, joining genius to create instead of joining genes. Mm. Now, when you join genius, if you are sexually attracted to the person, you get vocational arousal. You're vocationally aroused by this other person. You get to have a yearning to join your genius that also has a sexual component because you're attracted to this person, but not primarily to have sex or have a baby. primarily to have greater self mm-hmm. and greater work. And so what happens is, I coined a word for this, is telos, which is high purpose, and eros, which is love. And so the new word is telerotic. Mm. You fall in love with an erotic love for the higher purpose of joining genius with others. And when that happens, it's divine love, really.
Mm, that's beautifully said, Barbara. We're speaking right now with Barbara Marks Hubbard. She's the author of Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential. And so when you're talking about vocationally aroused, so are you talking about like the relationship that I'm in right now? We've been doing a lot of work on ourselves and our relationship, and it's been this tremendous growth opportunity. And of course, it's a very passionate relationship. But are you talking about like that would inspire the work that I do and the work that he does? Or what does it mean to you when you say vocationally aroused?
Well, in the case of vocational arousal, if you have, let's say, a desire to create something, to realize your own potential, and somebody else needs what you have to create, you then are vocationally aroused by joining your genius with that person. Now, you can have a wonderful personal relationship and sexual relationship where it's not about joining genius. It's about living together and loving each other, which is fine. But if you want to go to the evolutionary edge, I believe, you have the sexual arousal, you have the higher purpose arousal, and joining genius means that the unique gifts of each other are fusing like genes with the sperm and the egg. And what happens is you become a new person. Mm. And I feel one of the things that's happening to me, I'm panting because I'm walking uphill, I feel I'm becoming a new person, a new human, because I'm in love, too, on top of all of this at 85. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Well, tell us about this love.
What?
The love. You're in love right now.
Yes, I am.
I'd love to hear about it if you're open to sharing it.
Well, I don't want to share too much about it personally, except to say it's a twin soul who has the same life purpose as me and who wants to co-create with me, because each of us can be more fulfilled through co-creating than if we did it alone.
Awesome.
That's a very wonderful thing.
Awesome. All right. Well, it's time for a break. We are speaking right now with Barbara Marks Hubbard. She is the author of Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. And if you want to check out Barbara's talk on YouTube, you can look up Democratic National Convention 1984, Barbara Marks Hubbard. And we'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment.
I'm gonna be round my vegetables. I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all.
Sprouts, you've ate here before. Community Eats is back for the summer.
We are your local food co-op.
We are your volunteer opportunity.
We are your meeting place.
We are your nutritious Friday lunch.
We are sustainability.
We are community.
Eats every Friday.
Come by with a reusable container, donate, and tell us what community means to you. Friday, 11:30 to 3 p.m. Food, fun, friends.
Do you like laughing, hilarity, radical thought-provoking creativity, and laughing? UBC Improv is UBC's home for improvisational comedy, theater made up on the spot. Like us on Facebook to learn when our next shows are. Search for us on YouTube for our film sketches. And follow us on Twitter because we want the followers. UBC Improv. Insert cheesy slogan here.
Let's get it on. Sugar, let's get it on.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and right now we're speaking with Barbara Marx Hubbard. She's the author of Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So I wanted to, you mentioned that really all we need to do is relieve the stress of fear and separation, and you mentioned Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which basically says that when we have our basic needs met, we can pursue beauty and spirituality and consciousness and connectivity. We're not just running around on our reptilian survival mode. But what I'm noticing, and this is just my observation and opinion, I don't know if you share it, but there are plenty of people out there who have their basic needs met. I mean, most of us in North America are doing all right, even though it may be a daily struggle to have those needs met. But there are billionaires out there that, in my opinion, are still running on survival mode. They're hoarding resources. That comes from fear. Why is it that people who have everything and access to the best of everything are still so, I'm guessing, so fearful?
Well, I think that the deficiency need motivation, moving into growth need motivation, that growth need is really finding vocation that is self-rewarding and of service. I don't think meeting your growth needs happens because you've got a lot of stuff. It's certainly better if you're starving and you're in a prison camp or something, you have to deal immediately with survival. But once you get, you're no longer dealing with survival, think of how many people are taking substance or taking painkillers or taking different types of, ways of avoiding depression. Depression is rampant in our culture, and I think it's because we haven't found deep self-rewarding life purpose. And when you do find self-rewarding life purpose, the reward is not massive wealth. Now, if you happen to be rewarded by your work and gaining massive wealth, and I have met entrepreneurs who are, all of them, without exceptions of the ones I know, are moving towards conscious capitalism. For example, a man called Tony Hsieh of Zappo Shoes is a billionaire. He's a young guy. I've seen him at Success Summit 3.0 that was put on by the Center of Integral Wisdom. Tony has decided that cities aren't working, so he researched what makes a good city, and he's helping to rebuild downtown Las Vegas.
Cool.
Now, so one of the great things about really successful entrepreneurs is they can do a lot. And I think it's really great to be a successful entrepreneur if, like John Mackey with Whole Foods, he's a conscious capitalist. He's written a book called Conscious Capitalism. And his passion is really how to serve through Whole Foods, how that his employees should be served, how he's serving the culture, how he's serving his own life so that he's not, madly stretched and nervous and a wreck. You have to take care of yourself as well. So there's a whole new thing about well-being and consciousness that I really think is arising enough to become visible in our culture. It's not enough to change everything, but here's what I think. By connecting what's already changing for the good, you would see the emerging world is already here. And what we don't get is the fact that the emerging world is here. And you and I are part of it. So we're always looking outside and saying, oh, it's not working. But our lives are an expression of something that has, I would say, has divinity within it. It's good. You have to take yourself into account here.
Absolutely. Well, so with your book, I mean, I'm having this memory of right before the U.S. went into Iraq and like the U.N. said, no, we don't want you to do that. And the U.S. went and did it anyway. And there was the biggest peace movement on the planet so far. And I remember we were outside the U.S. consulate protesting, and someone was trying to organize all the people to create a big circle holding hands around the consulate. And so I saw a couple of people trying to do this, and obviously it's hard to get a whole bunch of people together. And so what I did is I went and I borrowed one of those bullhorns, the loudspeaker, and then it only took about 10 minutes and everyone got together and did it. So
you took initiative, yes.
So how do we organize these little pockets? I mean, and there's more and more people, obviously, as you said, there's millions of us, but how do we, I mean, we need an organizer.
Well, you know, I'm going to step out to be an inviter and attract organizers with me, and we have a big team already, is to say, let's organize to have the emerging world connected. The way I'm putting it is to connect co-creators in a planetary awakening in love, in time to make the shift from devolution toward evolution by 2020. And let's have a celebration on September 21st, 2020, as a part of the process of creating a new world. And in so doing, to literally create many, many small clusters of people already doing it. So it's not connecting in one big mass meditation. It's connecting people who are forming their little circles, their hubs. I call it the wheel of co-creation. It's in my book, Conscious Evolution. And it shows that what we need to do is bring together people in innovating in health, education, energy, justice, government, and so forth. When you do that, you begin to see all the parts need each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm offering a process of social synergy, or even more synergistic democracy, to join together locally and then eventually globally to connect what's already emerging. We need the process. A democracy was a very, very important process. And so is synergistic co-creation, a process, different than competition and winning. And my book, Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential, like Maslow awakened the power of our personal potential. So when you awaken the power of our social potential, then you have to look at the self-actualizing society. Like he looked at the self-actualizing person who had chosen work and who found it self-rewarding. Well, the self-actualizing society is made up of peaks of social excellence and performance that works in every field. And once we get a glimpse of the self-actualizing society, we'll do it. And I think my book, Conscious Evolution, is a call for the self-actualizing society.
Mm.
And that will be, I mean, that is its purpose. And in the next 5 years, I think we need to have a demonstration of the self-actualizing society based on what's already working and why it's working and how it's working as a not just single individual project, but projects seen as part of a whole system where let's say communication is a function, health is a function, environmental care is a function, governance is a function. Think of them as functional elements of any community. Well, there are people doing creative work in every function. They're not connected. That's the missing link. So that's, I invite you to participate in that call of connecting what's working.
Awesome. Well, Barbara, this is such an exciting idea, and I think so many of us have been wanting this for so long. You mentioned in your book the when they landed on the moon and we were able to see as a human race our planet.
Yes.
That was really a big moment in human history.
Indeed. And what I had in envisioned was looking from the astronaut's perspective on the planet, but seeing it as a living system with people on it. You see, all they saw at that distance was a beautiful planet, but there were no people. There were no systems. And what I saw was a living system where the communication system was like a nervous system, where all the different functions were existing like a pulsing organism, And the people on the planet, what I had in this, what I call a birth experience, is there was a moment where we collectively felt pain, intense pain, sort of like we did with 9/11. And the pain was so intense, we stopped for just a moment. And in the stopping of it, we began to feel empathy for each other, for suffering. And we already do that. But in this case, the suffering and caused an empathy that did not stop. And when the empathy didn't stop, and it went all around, touching almost every heart that participated, we began to hear spirit from within. Rather than having a separate religion, we heard spirit in our own voice. And we began to feel healed and so on. And then we went up there and we saw we have energy, resources, and technologies to make it work. And I think what I experienced was how it feels when it works. So that most people don't feel that. They don't have anything like that to feel. Hmm. But when you feel it like I do, then every time I talk about it, it seems to reinforce it in my nervous system, which is really, really great.
Well, Barbara, I wanted to touch on something else. You talk about empathy, which obviously is so important if we're going to, I mean, for any social group. But you also talk about in the evolutionary agenda, limiting our population growth. And I was curious about that. I mean, I definitely think we're overpopulated and we do need to do that. But how do we go about it? Because China has come up with this law to only have one child. And then people are able to be refugees here in Canada if they're on their second child, because the empathy for wanting the human right to procreate is so strong. So how do we balance that empathy and stopping people from having 3, 4, 5, 10 children?
I think that we have found wherever there is freedom in the system, there's a tendency for women to want fewer children. Tendency.
Yeah.
And I had 5 children. Now, I don't know a single person in my particular culture who wants 5 children. I have daughters, you know, they have 1 or 2 children or no children. And they say, Mom, 5 children? How could you have done that? and then I feel that if a woman really deeply wants to have children, then it's her vocation of destiny. And that parenting is now a vocation rather than a necessity. Or automatically, I'm going to have babies. Like when I got married in 51, we just had babies. We didn't necessarily even want them. We just had them because that's what we did. But now what's happened is having a baby is a choice. And that's a huge step in human evolution. It's a choice, and through contraception, we don't have to have a baby. So most sexuality is not about having babies in this culture. We have the right to abortion, right to life. Nobody thinks abortion is a good thing. But rather than having a totally unwanted child, I believe the choice is better. But way beyond that is the choice to have sex properly. With contraception or not at all. Mm-hmm. And so education is right in there. But if a woman, if a woman wants many children, I think it's up to her and her culture to support her in how to care for them. You know, and I don't say that's easy, but certainly if we can help people in having homes for the destitute, we could certainly help educate young mothers for the caring for the children if they choose to have a lot of them. And ultimately, you know, in China, they don't let you have more than one, or if you do have 2, you're really in trouble. I hope we don't have to get to that. I hope it's by free choice, and I think it is.
Mm-hmm. But even
population growth has declined anyway. The rate of growth has declined.
Well, even in North America, it seems to be, and this is a broad generalization, but it seems to be people who have lower income, less access to things like birth control, tend to have more children than people who... So even in our society where contraception is widely available, I'm wondering why it is that we're still seeing this, because there are, I mean, I'm sure that that people who can barely pay the rent aren't necessarily wanting another mouth to feed.
I think it's cultural. I mean, some cultures, having children is your whole way of being. It's all there is. Certain cultures. Mm-hmm. So I think if somebody feels that way and lives in this culture where they don't have, let's say, if you're an indigenous community, you're supported in whether you have children or not.
Mm-hmm.
We're living in a culture of a great deal of separation of the way people live. So if you're still carrying the cultural imprint of having a lot of children and you don't have the support for those children, the women have to be educated. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not okay, because their children will go crazy. And that's when you get the gangs, mm-hmm. and the bullying, is because you don't have families. And I think it's absolutely right to say that if you're going to have children, whether you're same-sex or heterosexual, you need to keep the children in that family.
Mm-hmm.
It's not okay. So that's just not okay. And so people who have children where their fathers leave those women taking care of the babies, it's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have cultural education, cultural norms, because, you know, a lot of the problems come from the children not having the right family.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to educate the parents. Is people who having children should be considered, once again, a great, great privilege.
So I'm wondering, the thought just came into my mind, if you think that we should be teaching parenting skills in high school.
I do, definitely. Definitely. Sexuality and parenting skills and choice as to whether you're choosing to be a parent. Because when you are parenting, like I got married at 51 and had my first baby when I was 51, in 1951. I actually had wanted to go to Washington to get a job. I wanted to be in the political arena. I had graduated from Bryn Mawr College. I'd gone to the École des Sciences Politiques in Paris. And I got married to a man I loved very much. He was an artist. We moved to a small town in Lime Rock, Connecticut, and I started having babies. Well, I loved my babies, but eventually I got very depressed.
Mm.
The reason I was depressed, I finally realized when I read Maslow and Betty Friedan, I was depressed because I didn't have a vocation. And parenting was not my vocation. I loved my children. And I was a good mother, 24/7 mother. But here was this longing in my heart. And once I discovered that I had some particular function in society, and I would call it as a communicator of evolutionary potential and a social innovator in that, as I've been, I then became really a different woman. I became an evolutionary woman. I was filled with an inner joy. And I think of that inner joy of life purpose as an impulse of evolution within each of us. It's like the spirit in action that creates evolution in you, wanting to become more. And evolution always wants more. You can see that. It's always evolving, more. So each of us is born with an imprint of evolution internalized. And when you say yes to it, all right, yes, I'm going to be a communicator. Yes, I'm going to have a radio show. Yes, I'm going to create a good garden. Yes, I'm going to have five babies. It's okay. But then, like me, I had the five babies and had no idea what my vocation was.
Hmm.
And my children turned out wonderfully. I'm really grateful to say. And I shared everything with them. I shared my depression with them. I shared my search with them. And one of my children, a grandchild, said to me, Renee, she said, you know, Granny, what you gave us is two things, a family clan, so we had a family reunion every year as they grew up, and two, a trajectory, an internal sense of purpose.
Hmm.
Every one of my eight grandchildren and five children have innate purpose. So what I gave them in a way was by modeling, discovering purpose for myself and loving them. I took them with me. I took five children to Washington. You know, I did a lot of things. They were with me all the time. And they ended up all seeking purpose. So I say that to all mothers and fathers, but particularly mothers here. Your internal life purpose is one of your greatest gifts to your children. And as long as you love them and keep them with you, don't abandon them, but take them with you.
Hmm. That sounds exciting.
It is exciting. It is. And then the children end up to be exciting. We're going to have a family reunion. My eldest daughter is up in Vashon, which is off the coast of Seattle. And they're all clustering. We haven't had a family reunion for a little while. And she's taking over from me, I'm happy to say. doing the job. And she and her husband, they built a fire pit. And we're all getting there. And we're just so excited to see each other. And that family reunion is something that everybody needs to have some sort of family plan building. Because in our day and age, most of us have lost the extended family. Mm-hmm. We don't see. I'm living in Santa Barbara, California, and not one single one of my children live near me. Well, it's not because they don't love me. It's because their life purpose has taken them all these different places. So, and I can't travel to see all of them. So the family reunion is the best. And I'm moving to Berkeley, California, to be near my sister, Patricia Ellsberg. I have to have family. I'm 85 years old. And then I'll live with my daughter, Suzanne, in Vashon. She said, Mom, we'll take you in. If you need to go, we'll have you. Well, that's a blessing, and a lot of people don't have it.
Well, it's interesting.
So, the whole aging phenomenon is like the birthing phenomenon. It's very interesting.
Hmm. It's also, you had mentioned how we have this crisis of purpose going on. So many of us don't know what our life purpose is. And even though we have our basic needs met, now we're feeling this emptiness, this lack of confidence in what we're here for. But I noticed that if you go to countries where they don't have so many resources, but family is a priority, they're just so much happier.
Well, it's true, because we're social beings. And what I teach on internet, on the Shift Network, and about 70% of my students, I ask, how many of you feel lonely? At least over 70% felt lonely. And most of them are women over 50. So as you get older, you don't have your children around you. You may or may not have a husband who's alive, and you're alone. Now, then you have to invent a lifestyle. You can go to a retirement home. You can, like for me, I don't want to go to a retirement home. So I'm actually groping for a lifestyle. And I think what I'm going to do is move to Berkeley and create a center with other people who are like me wanting to create something. And I'm going to have a whole new life. Because otherwise, I'm going to be lonely.
And... Well, I love that you're looking for this connectivity and the communication. It's so exciting. And I'm wondering, right now I should put out the name of your book again. We're speaking with Barbara Marks Hubbard. She's the author of Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential. And there's a website listed on your book cover, evolve.org. Is that the best place for people to get in touch with you?
Yes, it is. Yes.
And so for people who, I get the sense that some of the listeners, I'm still sort of searching for what my life purpose looks like. And so I imagine that I attract other people who are in that same boat. Where do you suggest, should they become students of yours, or how do they find that?
Well, I would like to say that we're offering a wonderful course starting on September 8th. It's called Sacred Journey of the Conscious Evolutionary. And I suggest that people go to my evolve.org network and they'll find out how to do it. It's also on the Shift Network. And I would invite people who are interested to please take my course. It's a wonderful course. It's 24 weeks and it starts out with a new story. Then it goes into how to become the new person. And then how to co-create a new society and join with others that share your genius. We're going to really see how to do that.
Oh, I'm curious.
I hope
about your what you're going to be starting in Berkeley. I'll be interested to see how that unfolds.
Yes, yes. Where do you live?
I'm in Vancouver, BC, in Canada.
Vancouver. Well, I hope that you'll check in with me again.
Thank you, for sure. And, well, you have a few books out already, so I'm sure you'll be writing a new one sometime soon.
Yes, I am. I am becoming a new human.
Ooh.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, we have just a few minutes left before DJ Chris Arefik comes into the studio to host his show, Parts Unknown. So I'm just wondering what you'd like to spend the last few minutes on, Barbara.
Well, I'd like people to go on to my evolve.org and say, yes, I want to participate in the planetary awakening. Yes. I'd like them to do that and get so that I can find them and connect them as we move ahead with this.
Wonderful. And I'm curious, do you have on your website, is there a way for people to connect with each other, or is this just joining a mailing list? What does it look like?
Right now, we're actually creating a community. And if you, it's in the works right now. So if you sign up for our newsletter, you'll be on our list. And then we're going to invite everyone to form a community. And then we're going to do a global communion of pioneering souls once a week, free on Sunday, to go into the resonant field together.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Hmm. All right, Barbara. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap things up for the day?
I think I would just ask everyone to take a deep breath, to recognize that the deep heart's desire inside you is the impulse of creation as you. And that when you say yes to it, it says yes to you. And you start to turn on your creativity, your regeneration, your beauty, and your life purpose. So I invite everyone to do that.
Thank you so much, Barbara. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. So right now, this hour, we've been speaking with Barbara Marks Hubbard. She is the author of Conscious Evolution, Awakening the Power of Our Social Potential. And if you'd like to get in touch with her or join the movement, go to evolve.org.
Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Barbara. Have a wonderful day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Again, that was Barbara Marks Hubbard, and in just a moment, DJ Chris Arefik with Parts Unknown here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might also be listening to my show online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, on the Co-Creator Network, or on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/spiritualshow. I'm Marie Bernard, and it's been such a pleasure chatting with you. Next week, we're going to be talking about Ayurveda. And so hopefully you'll tune in. And I've got some psychologists coming up in the coming weeks for lots more work on our confidence, on ourselves, on our life purpose, and all of that. So I hope that you will tune in. Want to send you lots and lots of love. Be well. Love you so much. Namaste. Timmy, your friends are here to see you. Get off the computer, will you?
Hey, Timmy, do you want to come out and shoot hoops with us at the park?
You know what? I'm actually busy playing on the computer right now.
Whatever. You never come out to play with us anymore. Let's go, guys.
30% of young adults are prone to stroke, and this statistic is on the rise. Stroke prevention starts early.
Are you sure you don't want to play? My cousin's in town, and he's playing too.
Strokes can be prevented by regular exercise, a healthy, balanced diet, and sleeping well.
You know what? I'm coming too. Wait up for me, guys.
Follow UBCHSF on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for regular tips on healthy living.
Strong heart, strong start.
Hi, everyone. We're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy.
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety, or you can even join our Facebook group.
When
name is David Scott. I play wide receiver for the University of British Columbia football team, and I'm here to discuss the Be More Than a Bystander program. Myself and a few other players were lucky enough to work alongside the BC Lions and EVA, the Ending Violence Association, to support this cause. The main goal of the Be More Than a Bystander initiative is to increase awareness of domestic violence against women. For more information on the cause, please visit endingviolence.org.
Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts on Commercial Drive and other areas at
Bone Rattle Music Limited, High Life Records, People's Co-op Bookstore, Audio Pile Records, Bad Bird Media, Band Merch Canada, Vancouver Music Gallery, and Pandora's Box Rehearsal Studios.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
Various members of the CITR Student Executive sit in and host this blend of music and banter about campus and community news, arts, and pop culture. Drop-ins welcome! Student Special Hour, every Tuesday at 1 to 2 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.